This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
The stock market the day after the first big sell-off since the presidential election. I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. Remember back when everyone was worried about suspicious clowns in the woods? Now, that's the last time before this week that key stock indicators fell by 1% or more. In early trading today, the Dow Jones Industrial Average had fell another 72 points. That's nearly 0.4%. The S&P 500 was nearly flat. The NASDAQ Composite was in positive territory this morning, up 10 points in early trading, about 0.2%. This is the morning after the Dow fell 237 points, 1.1%. The NASDAQ down 1.8%, casting a shadow on Asian and European markets as well. Now, economic data can factor into the psychology, corporate profits and losses, international tensions. This time, it seems to be Washington politics. Susan Schmidt is Senior Vice President and Portfolio Manager at Westwood Holdings Group in Dallas. Good morning.
Good morning.
But you, this time, with these share prices, would draw a direct line to Washington, D.C.?
This morning, I would. There's a lot of attention about the health care plan and what happens and does it get through Congress. If Washington gets stalled out around the health care plan in Congress, they can't get to tax reforms. And tax reforms are what is really important to the market. So hence, we have a lot of concern, and we saw that in the market yesterday, where things most impacted by the Washington plans, so infrastructure, financials, those sectors were hurt more than others in the sell-off. And that's because there's this growing concern that Washington isn't going to get to the next things on their agenda.
But to put this in perspective, it was not Armageddon yesterday going into today, but we do have to note it's the first soft patch since, I think, about Halloween.
That's exactly right, since October. So we have had a lovely stretch without any big move. In fact, yesterday was the first time since October that we've seen a bigger than 1% move in the market. That's a long stretch for us. Remember that volatility hasn't gone away. It is coming back. We just had a brief respite.
All right. Susan Schmidt at Westwood Holdings in Dallas. Thank you.
Thank you.
In just a few minutes, we'll get new data on used as opposed to newly built houses and apartments. This covers February sales, the month before sales hit a 10-year high, but that may not repeat. Here's Marketplace's Aaron Schrenk.
January was a banner month for existing home sales due in part to the weather, says Zillow senior economist Aaron Terrazas.
December was just so snowy and cold across much of the country that kept people indoors. A lot of that rebounded in January, so we saw people who had stayed indoors in December kind of come back out.
Economists anticipate a sharp drop for February, but say an improving job market means higher sales than last year. That's nothing to celebrate, says Wharton School real estate professor Susan Wachter.
Home ownership rates are at 50-year lows. The first-time home buyer is missing in action.
Zillow's Terrazas says climbing mortgage rates and a stubbornly low supply of houses are forcing prices up.
There's a lot of buyers out there relative to the number of homes for sale. So even as the actual number of transactions that close plods along, prices and values are rising very quickly.
Existing home sales are just one piece of the puzzle. Sales numbers on new homes are due out from the Commerce Department tomorrow. I'm Aaron Schrenk for Marketplace.
Here's a story we're watching. There had been a big glut in ocean-going cargo capacity. Shippers last year were getting pummeled by, among other things, global trade tapering down. Early this year, however, shipping prices rebounded, and now there is news that the U.S. Justice Department is looking into the possibility of price fixing. CEOs from Maersk, Hapag-Lloyd, and a bunch of other companies you see on the metal boxes were having a big meeting in San Francisco when in burst the feds with subpoenas. The authorities are not commenting. If you go to the National Air and Space Museum in D.C. and try to sit in the Apollo 11 capsule, well, don't. Online, however, you can explore the inside of the command module digitally. It's super cool. There's even a calendar scrawled on an inner bulkhead where the astronauts marked off the days. Museums around the world are experimenting like this. Marketplace's Adrian Hill has more.
Between the megamouth shark, the bison diorama, and hordes of excited school kids, the Natural History Museum of Los Angeles County has added a virtual reality exhibit, a digital ocean called The Blue. General admission is $12. For an extra 10, visitors can strap on a headset and go virtual scuba diving.
Okay, welcome. So this is your area. Feel free to move around. You're going to be taken to 3 different ocean habitats. The last one is the deep sea.
A blue whale swims overhead, a school of silvery fish, the dark abyss.
VR is just a new medium. You know, it's more and more and more, and people are experimenting with it.
That's Jennifer Morgan. She works at LA's Natural History Museum. She says VR is a way to get people in and interested. Come for the virtual ocean, stay for the dinosaur fossils.
I definitely think it appeals to younger audiences.
But also,
we've had older people, 60 years old and 70 years old, try this out. It's the first time they've ever done anything like this. And they're, you know, they seem to be thrilled.
In spite of VR's promise as the next big thing in tech, it still isn't that mainstream, which is part of the reason partnerships like this one make sense from the tech business side, too.
We think that out-of-home venues and locations, such as museums, are a terrific place for the public to have their first experience in virtual reality.
That's Neville Spiteri. His company, Weaver, made The Blue and loaned the museum the computers and headsets. Weaver wouldn't disclose the rest of the financial arrangement, but the goal, he says, is to make fans of the medium.
And then perhaps at some point, yes, you'll be inspired to buy your own headset.
And be willing to pay for the content that studios like Weaver are making. I'm Adrian Hill for Marketplace.
And if you missed Adrian's other piece about how museums see the risks and benefits of virtual reality, it's at marketplace.org. The tab labeled Mentioned On Air does it. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.
Hey there, I'm Bridget, co-host of Million Bazillion, Marketplace's podcast for kids about money. I want to tell you about our email newsletter course, Million Bazillion Academy. In this new and improved course, we'll help your kids learn about crypto, credit cards, and inflation in just 6 weeks. Each lesson comes with a podcast episode, a fun cartoon, discussion questions, and an activity that lets kids apply what they're learning in the real world. You can start at any time and work at your own pace. Sign up today at marketplace.org/academy.